Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, a taster plate of the tastiest technology morsels brought to the Guardian's table this week. I'm Alex Kratosky, and on this episode, we're going mobile, finding out firsthand about the breaking news from the Mobile World Congress with our man on the floor, Richard Ray. And we're also finding out how mobile technology is saving the world. Joining me in the pod to discuss are Charles Arthur and Bobby Johnson. Welcome to you both.
Hey.
What new technology have you been playing around with this week, Charles?
It's more of an old technology. We have a dog and we have a sort of radio alarm dog fence, and it's broken. And I cannot figure out how it's broken.
Well, so, how do those things work? They just sort of send a pulse, don't they?
Well, the one we have is it's effectively a big loop which goes around, you know, the perimeter where you live, which effectively is an aerial, and the dog's collar is a radio receiver, and if it picks up the radio signal, then it sort of says to the dog, don't you go near there, because I'll give you a shock.
Oh, poor little puppy.
And the dog says, okay, I'm staying away. Except in our situation, not doing it.
Oh, clever dog. He's
learned how to rewire that. The dog sabotaged it, yeah.
Hacking the electricity fence. And Bobby, you've been quite active, haven't you, over in San Francisco?
Yeah, Twestival and a whole bunch of stuff. But actually, what I'm looking for at the moment is some water pump technology, because it has absolutely been bucketing down biblical proportions of rain for about 2 or 3 days now, and I'm hoping the floods aren't going to start to come in my door and wash me away.
That's, I think you want the old sandbag technology there.
Yes. Go to New Orleans. I think they have a few. But yes, that's what you get for moving to California, Bobby. If it doesn't fall off the side of America, you get the tsunami that fell off. Anyway, we've got loads to talk about this week about technology, plus the news and your views. Stick around for the rest of the show and prepare to be amazed. This week, the third annual Climate Change Summit met in London, and in addition to maintaining their focus on carbon management, they were also seeking solutions that keep sustainability costs low and public awareness high. One innovator, Shannon Spanicky, believes that she has a solution, a handy personal pollution monitor that's embedded in the most indispensable of gadgets, the mobile phone. It assesses the level of carbon dioxide from your pocket and spits out a stream of data that can be fed into real-time maps. Already gaining interest from governments and handset manufacturers, Shannon came in to see Tech Weekly and to demonstrate her tech. I began by asking her what her background was and how she came to develop the system.
I used to travel a lot back and forth between Tijuana and San Diego, and it's the busiest border crossing in the world, so that yields a lot of traffic. There's 24 lanes, bumper to bumper, 24 hours a day, cars idling at speeds between 0 and 15, 20 miles per hour. So this is very bad for pollution. And I was just curious, crossing so much, what the pollution levels were, so I went online to actually see what the levels were. And what I realized was that the nearest pollution monitor was about 2 miles away from that site. And then I happened to notice that at the border crossing, there's this kind of semi-permanent community of street vendors, and they all had mobile phones. So I thought, this is a really interesting pervasive technology. What if they could be monitoring pollution?
What was the process from taking the shortfall to bringing it to the mobile phones? How did you develop that technology, and what's involved with the technology?
Well, the very large pollution monitors, they're about 5 feet tall. In some places in the world, they take samples maybe 24 hours every 3 days, so they're not monitoring consistently. It's really expensive technology, really hard to maintain, to calibrate. Most developing cities actually aren't able to maintain them because they can't afford to. So I was looking at a way to make a much lower cost pollution monitor. And that was probably one of the first considerations in developing my technology. Right now, the board is made up of three different modules. It's a communications module, a sensor module, and an MCU, which is just basically the brain of it. It communicates with a mobile phone, or basically it can use any wireless protocol. It can use Bluetooth, it can use wireless LAN, it could use RFID. We're even looking at Zigbee, but although Zigbee is only in one phone right now, I think it's an LG phone out of Korea. So basically the device takes a sample from the sensor board, and then it does some calculation, and then it transmits it through the communications module to the mobile. And on the mobile, it's visualized, it's stored, and then it's transmitted to a server.
So that's then taken to a central location for, I'm assuming, environmental officials to take a look at it and to get an accurate reading of any place. That's a hell of a lot of data.
It is a lot of data.
Imagine if, for example, these chipsets were put into actual mobile phones.
Well, there's two interesting things there, I think. Of course, the data management, but also this idea of imagining that everyone with a mobile phone could be a pollution monitor. Because one of the shortcomings with these monitors, the official environmental monitors, is that they're too expensive and too bulky to actually grow in proportion to population, to the growth of population and urban sprawl. And right now, we are working through different data management strategies. But this is something that's going to come along the way. I mean, each pilot we do gets a little bit larger each time, and we're still dealing with this as we go along.
Who is using this, or who is paying for this at the minute?
No one. I've been working with an NGO in Tijuana who was interested in using the technology mostly for advocacy. They're a binational NGO, so they deal a lot with cross-border pollution, air and water. And I really like the idea of the technology being used as a tool for advocacy. I have had conversations with environmental organizations about using it at the agency level, which is really interesting because I guess originally when I invented this, it was more for advocacy. But this idea that it could be more for supplementing and agency data rather than only challenging its empiricism, I think, is interesting.
And one of the other interesting things, and you alluded to this before, are the visualizations that come up on the mobile phones themselves. So what outcomes, if somebody then sees that, you know, oh my God, I'm standing in a whole lot of pollution at the minute, what do you think are the real outcomes for people who are using these things in their mobile phones?
One really interesting outcome is maybe to consider asthmatics. There's a large percentage of asthmatics in the world. And according to the pollution levels, an asthmatic could reroute their trip somewhere or determine the least polluted route from point A to point B. But I think in very polluted places, everyone already knows it's polluted. And this doesn't remediate the environment.
Do you think, though, that people's ability to see their personal impact, perhaps, will have an effect ultimately on how they use the environment? Or is that the aim?
I don't know how people react to it. But on the one hand, I worry that it will make a massive paranoia. But, for example, I was in some conversations with the California EPA, and they were interested in the Border Patrol workers at the Border Patrol stations using this device. And I thought, this could be really interesting because they could see that they're actually being exposed to very, very bad levels of pollution. And there could, I mean, it's the U.S., there could be lawsuits everywhere.
Yeah, after did you that. Say this to them, or did you just let it lie?
I mean, what was interesting was they weren't really interested in this being a citizen technology. They were interested in using it only for government uses. And the conversation sort of stopped after that.
One of the dangers, though, is that because it's data associated with, say, a mobile phone, is that that pollution level is then associated with a personal technology and therefore the person. And obviously then comes into issue some of the privacy elements. So, for example, what happens then if an insurance company, a health insurance company, finds this and sees you monitoring and recognizes that you live in a particularly polluted environment? In the U.S., obviously, it's most important. You're not allowed health insurance just for that very nature.
Yeah, this is absolutely a threat. I don't think I'm really in a position to imagine the implications of this. But what I would say is that I think that simply that the technology raises these questions, or because it asks a lot of really hard questions. And I think that that's reason enough at least to take the risk in putting it out there in the world to begin a conversation about these very important things. I think that there's a lot of really interesting directions that this could go into, and really hard but interesting questions that it asks too, definitely.
That was Shannon Spanake, developer of Squirrel, the personal pollution monitor. Charles, you're interested in green technology. You edited the top 100...
The Clean Tech 100.
Clean Tech 100 that came out in The Guardian last September, I believe. What other similar products are out there in the market, personal pollution monitors or otherwise?
I don't know that many that are out there because it is, as you said, it's difficult to make them small and cheap enough. So there are some people who are working on things like microarrays that would look for particular pollutants, but it tends to be a very specialist area.
What or who stands in the way of the development of these? Obviously, it's the size, but if somebody does develop something that's small, like Shannon has done, for example, why wouldn't this suddenly become a commonplace item to go into your mobile phone?
First of all, there is just the cost. Secondly, there is the difficulty of persuading mobile phone manufacturers to put it in because it becomes an extra cost. And then there's the question of, well, do people really want to know how polluted their lives are? I mean, if those border guards really knew how much nitrous oxides and carbon monoxide and stuff they're being exposed to, then I think that probably it being the US, their health insurance costs would rocket. So all sorts of societal inertia is arranged against the introduction of these sorts of things, even though you can see that they're a great idea.
Bobby, do you think that things like the squirrel or any of these other data visualizations, personal data visualization tools, would change people's behavior? Is there any evidence that things like, for example, the noise pollution map that was released last year or the crime map that was also released in London last year, do these things change behavior?
The jury's still out for a lot of this stuff. I mean, you know, we're seeing more and more data visualization and capturing people's personal data and then turning it around and trying to use it to effect. Although I think, you know, things like crime maps show that really what you need is a selling point that people are prepared to use in their own everyday lives. Crime maps are not just useful if you're buying a house, and to be honest, how many people are buying houses these days? They're useful for monitoring what goes on in your neighbourhood. So that makes crime maps compelling. But I think the idea of knowing exactly how polluted the area you're in is the kind of thing that's really a real edge case. I mean, most people either don't care or they wouldn't want to know the answers anyway, and there's not a lot they could do about it. I mean, you know, what do you do if you live in a very polluted area?
The thing about crime maps isn't so much whether they're really great at telling you about crime, because it has to be said, the ones in Britain aren't that good if you're trying to figure out what's going on. But they have to force, you know, by their nature, they force the government organisations to stop thinking about this as data that they own to being data that the citizens own. And especially if the citizens are generating it with the mobile phones and saying, hey, look, this place is very polluted, then if, for example, you have a lot of traffic and a lot of pollution, then maybe it gets your council to start to think about, well, is there a better way of routing traffic, or is there something we could do to alter it? It changes the whole emphasis from being something where this public data is actually accessible and useful to the public, rather than the situation where it's public data that's owned by a sort of an oligarchy.
We're inviting these technologies into our homes, into our person. You know, in many ways, you look back at what Orwell was talking about in 1984, and he talks about the surveillance state. Often we think that this was imposed by a sort of top down, but in fact, what's happening is that we're inviting these things into our lives ourselves.
But you could easily imagine with the pollution monitoring on a mobile phone that you simply anonymize the SIM to some extent. You know, that at the receiver end, it has some sort of transaction where it says, okay, I recognize the SIM, but then it anonymizes it and drops the last four digits, say, of the phone number.
Well, you can check out The Guardian's top 100 clean tech companies at guardian.co.uk/environment, and you can get in on this discussion at guardian.co.uk/technology. Now, here's Charles with this week's technology news.
City analysts say that the British social networking site Friends Reunited could be worth only between £20 million and £40 million, a fraction of the £175 million that ITV paid for it in 2005. However, they say that the broadcaster, which is struggling to build its cash reserves, should try to sell it, despite the dire market conditions. The Twitter festival Twestival has raised thousands of pounds for a charity to bring clean water to third world countries. Organisers are still totting up precisely how much was pledged and raised at the meetings which were held around the world. The London one raised £10,000, Manchester £4,000 and Birmingham £1,500, but scores more of them have yet to report from around the world. The founders of the file-sharing search site The Pirate Bay have appeared in a Swedish court accused of profiting from copyright infringement. If convicted, they face jail sentences of up to 2 years and fines of 1.2 million kroner, or about £98,000. The prosecutor spent much of the first day demonstrating how a torrent would be downloaded from the site. The trial is expected to last until April. Finally, if you've seen someone going past very fast on an odd-looking bike, check whether it's Lance Armstrong. The 7-time Tour de France winner discovered his custom time trial bicycle was stolen after a break-in to his truck. So what did he do to put out an all-points bulletin? He asked Twitter to help him find it. Apparently there's only one like it in the whole world. You can see a picture at twitpic.com/1i8t1.
Thanks very much, Charles. I love that idea. I'm going to keep my eye out. We should start a campaign like we did with the Google car. If you see Lance Armstrong's bike, take a picture and send it in. Friends Reunited, can we talk a little bit about that? What does this mean, this valuation mean for the perceived value of social networks?
Well, it means that it's fallen they've fallen a great deal in the past 6 months to 12 months. I mean, everyone felt, to be honest, that ITV was overpaying enormously for Friends Reunited when they bought it in 2005. 2005, £175 million, and that wasn't even the top of the market, which I think goes to Microsoft for the $240 million that it paid for 1.6% of Facebook. But they're crazy numbers. You can't really justify why you would spend that much. Over its lifetime, was ITV really expecting to make profits of $175 million on Friends Reunited? No one could see it.
Well, at the minute, it was based on the pay model, wasn't it? The subscription model.
At that time, it was. But even then, even in 2005, Friends Reunited felt like it had sort of jumped the shark.
Doesn't this say, Charles, more about ITV's straits than about social networking?
Well, social networking is still strong in the sense that lots of people like to do it, but the financial model is weak in the sense that you can't persuade that many people to pay money for it. I mean, Twestival is really interesting because there's an entire charity effort where people simply say, we've met up through Twitter. Let's go and do something that's entirely going to benefit people in the third world, where clean water is a far bigger issue than how recently you updated your status. But organisations like Last.fm and Facebook and MySpace and Bebo, which according to MacBooks at TechCrunch, AOL is trying to sell, and of course Friends Reunited. The question is always, well, what's the model? The transaction between people, in terms of just saying hello to other people, it's quite hard to persuade people to give you a bit of money for it.
Well, keep up with these stories and check out the latest all week at guardian.co.uk/technology. It's the biggest week in the mobile industry calendar, the annual Mobile World Congress. Upwards of 70,000 of the international content providers, handset manufacturers, operators and publishers have descended on the Ramblas in Barcelona to share, pitch, pimp and observe the newest, shiniest and brightest technologies and to lead or to follow the trends over the next 12 months. We've tracked down our resident mobile technology guru, the Guardian's own Richard Ray, to give us his insight into the reason all the throngs are there. Thank you very much for joining us on the line, Richard.
No worries.
So what's happened today? Today's the first day of Mobile World Congress. What's been the big news, headlines?
Well, today is actually, oddly enough, sort of minus one day. It's the day when they have all the press conferences and everyone sort of turns up and learns about the new and exciting whizzy gadgets. And unfortunately, I have to just point something out first, which is that actually attendance is down this year because we are in this nasty, horrible recession. So we've got about 50,000 people knocking around, which is slightly down on the 56,000 that were in Barcelona last year. And to be honest, the recession is hanging over as something of a gloomy cloud over Barcelona at the moment. Despite that, however, everyone seems to be flinging smartphones at the market. So today we've had new smartphones coming out from Nokia, who obviously always kick the event off with an early morning press conference just to force everyone out of bed at some ungodly hour. New handsets from LG, new whizzy handsets from Sony Ericsson, Samsung, HTC. I could go on, but frankly, I won't. What I will say is I've just been playing with a gadget which I think is hilarious and has taken me right back to when I used to watch TV cop shows and spy shows and James Bond films when I was a teenager, which is a phone that's actually in a watch. So you get to talk. Yes, it's like a bit like a communicator from Blake 7, I think. It's almost as big as well, to be honest. Made by LG, and earlier today, Orange said they will be stocking it in Europe. So it will be coming to the UK in the summer, so everyone can looks like an idiot as they talk into their wrists. I mean, as it happens, actually, it's Bluetooth as well, so you don't have to talk into your wrist. But to be honest, I think most people probably will.
Can you do the thing where you stick your finger in your ear and then talk into your wrist?
Yes. Oh, yes. It's very silly indeed. But, I mean, the big theme, well, there are two big themes if we sort of remove ourselves slightly from doom and gloom and recession. I mean, it's worth noting that most development cycles in the mobile phone industry are about 2 years, so 2 years long. So the phones that we're seeing this time round are the phones that they suddenly started producing 2 years ago. And, of course, 2 years ago we were all talking about the iPhone, which ironically is what I'm using to make this phone call with. And because we were talking about it then, everyone got panicky about touchscreens and the future of the mobile industry. So pretty much most of the big top-end smartphones that we've seen have been touchscreens. They've all had various attempts at producing good user interfaces. None of them, and this is a terrible thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, none of them is quite as good, to be honest, as the touchscreen on the iPhone, which really is, it really did set the standard, which Samsung is approaching. Nokia are, to be honest, quite some way away from. LG are having a good stab at it, and HTC have some good phones and some good ideas, but I think they're still a year away from that. It's a terrible phrase, but I'll use it anyway, iPhone killer. So we're still waiting.
Well, one of the things that the analysts and pundits are talking about is that this year is the year that the mobile web is finally going to reach that tipping point. Do you see any evidence of that on the floor?
Having done this industry for as long as I have, I'm pretty sure I've written this is the year of the mobile internet about four times in the last 4 years.
Excellent.
But no, you're quite right. And to be honest, it's this it's the joining together of a couple of things. Firstly, the mobile phone operators themselves are offering flat rate deals, which to be honest was the only way we could ever go when it came to the mobile internet. And secondly, we've now got the handsets where you can get on the internet. It looks like the internet. It works like the internet. And it's faster than the dial-up speeds we were living with years ago.
Another trend that people are talking about is that this is the year of the mobile app. Are you seeing any evidence of that as well?
Well, again, this is another one of those reactions to Apple. We've had mobile applications for years. I mean, there's a large developer community that's been working on Nokia applications for some time. There is an obvious developer community that's been working on applications for Windows mobile phones. And we've had Windows mobile phones for nearly a decade. What's changed is iTunes showed that you could actually put them all in one place and people would use them. So what we've had, certainly today, is we've had application stores being announced by Microsoft, who were very specific that it was not a Me Too product, it was something different from what everyone else was doing, and from Nokia, who were very specific that it wasn't a Me Too product, it was doing something differently, but to be honest, they are both just catch-up plays against iTunes.
Rick, I'm assuming that Apple itself isn't actually there.
Good God, no. No, they would never deign to come to an event like this. It's far too tradey. 2 years ago, there were people wandering around wearing chinos and those lovely polo shirts, saying, "Hi, I'm Brad from Cupertino," but doing it very quietly and surreptitiously, and wandering around having secret meetings with O2 and Orange. This year, they're not here at all. And to be honest, a couple of years ago, they had to be here to try and get the operators to take a chance with them, to be honest. This time, they've done so well. The effect it's had on the industry is such that everyone has had to follow them and had to copy them. But they don't feel that they need to be here.
Isn't it rather weird? Isn't it a sort of a Banquo's ghost sort of situation where, you know, the big name simply, you know, doesn't turn up to the party that's being thrown almost for it?
Well, that's the other thing, is that the mobile phone industry has a very strange relationship with Apple, in that, to be fair, they hate them. They really don't like Apple, because they have essentially come in and rearranged an industry that was working rather well for all the people that the industry thought were important, which is basically the handset manufacturers and the operators. No one in this industry really gave a stuff about the customer a couple of years ago. And Apple came in and realistically changed the game. The customer became far more important. And now everyone is, as I said earlier, is playing catch-up. It's also worth noting that obviously Steve Ballmer's been here. And Steve Ballmer has been sucking up for the mobile phone industry for years, or Microsoft have been sucking up for the mobile phone industry for many years. And he's going to continue doing that until finally he produces some handset or some sort of application which is so spectacular that suddenly he doesn't have to turn up either.
I was going to ask about Microsoft, Rick, because, I mean, the big thing that they seem to have done seems to have been rebranding Windows Mobile as Windows Phone.
I know.
Is it any different?
No. And the thing is that it's what is particularly weird about that is that someone's wandering past me with a suitcase laden, I suspect, with all the phones they've just nicked off the stand. It's worth noting as a brief aside that during the couple of days or 3 or 4 days of Mobile World Congress, there are more muggings and pickpocketing incidents in Barcelona than anywhere else in Europe.
I met somebody the other day who claims to have had his drink spiked last time he was at Mobile World Congress, actually.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. The classic one that happened last year, although to be honest, I've been doing this so long, it might have been the year before, someone turned up with a van and stole all the flat-screen televisions out of the press room.
Brilliant.
Because the whole place is full of kit. Anyway, sorry, to get back to your original question, which now, unfortunately, I've utterly forgotten. The new version of Windows Mobile is actually Windows Mobile 6.5. So calling it Windows Phone, which is the brand name they're going to start using for the phones rather than the operating system, is something of a misnomer, to be honest. There will be, of course, a Windows Mobile 7, which will be coming out after Windows 7, as they try and sort of integrate all the various moving parts of the Windows empire.
And my last question, Rick, is what do you expect if today is the day when all the announcements are made, what do you expect is going to happen over the next couple of days?
Well, the green technology phones are coming out. It's all a bit odd, really. I mean, we're talking about recession, but we're talking about very expensive handsets, and we're talking about ecologically friendly handsets. So we're finally going to get the universal charger. It will finally mean that
we're all over the moon here.
Yes, I can finally get rid of all those chargers in my drawers in the office. But that's the GSMA or the GSM Association backed initiative to produce one charger that will work with all phones, and they're hoping that the majority of them will have the same this charger by 2012. And it essentially, if anyone's got a BlackBerry Storm, which has the micro USB connection, it's that. The other reason for mentioning that is that the charger itself is also 50% more efficient, or uses 50% less power than existing chargers. And also, continuing on the green theme, we've had solar-paneled mobile phones. Samsung's had one. LG are doing it as well. And we're base stations with sort of solar power or wind power, which is particularly important in the developing world, not, to be honest, for any environmental reasons, but because those generators, masts at the moment, are powered by generators using diesel, and the diesel tends to get nicked.
Well, we'll let you get back to your tapas. Thank you very much. Well, at least to wandering around the Ramblas. Don't take any drinks from strangers, please. We want to see you back here soon. We'll have much more from a Mobile World Congress next week on the pod, but do keep your eyes on guardian.co.uk/technology for the latest up-to-the-minute news and analysis of all the announcements that come from Barcelona. So let's hear what you've been saying on the blogs. Bobby, what's been happening on technology?
Well, we were asking last week for everybody's thoughts about ebook readers after our discussion with Naomi Alderman. And there were a flood of suggestions from Twitter. But on Facebook, I think Dave Cooper said that he thought the best gadget for e-readers will be when flexible screens are viable. They could be part of your phone, just pulling out the screen from the side of your phone to read. Interesting idea there. I also blogged about the idea that piracy should be considered an indicator of future trends, in which case there's not a lot of traction for ebooks because piracy is relatively limited. DJ H World responded with a couple of points, but then made what I think we should all consider the killer argument for ebooks, which is: the problem with ebooks is they don't make you look cool when you take a lady back to your house. There's nothing better than showing off your collection of books, I say. I'll leave that one at that, I think.
The man has a point. Anyway, well, over on the games blog, Keith has been keeping it mobile, unsurprisingly. He wrote about the top 10 mobile games that you should download this month. And my favorite one, of course, was the Chuck Norris Bring On the Pain mobile game. And as Keith says, he says, the beauty of mobile gaming is it's not possible to imagine this being attempted on any other platform. But here it works, and it's an absolute blast. Bring On the Pain is not exactly a rich, enormously deep gameplay experience, but every stage is alive with detail and ideas. And you can't argue with a game that threatens to roundhouse kick your phone into orbit if you don't follow the instructions properly. Now, of course, you can imagine the deluge of kick, punch, block, and all kinds of hilarious things that happened on the game's blog. But my favorite was a comment from Natty Dread 69, who actually doesn't say anything about the game itself, but he says, "Did you know a man once asked Chuck Norris if his real name is Charles? Chuck Norris did not respond. He simply stared at him until he exploded." And Charles is looking at me like that right now. Your turn, Charles. What's going on over at Technology?
Well, Jack blogged about the Windows 7 upgrades and how he pointed out the Windows XP users might find themselves having to do the upgrade to a new installation at a higher price than some of the people who went to Vista. To which Elmer Fudd responded, "Didn't we have all these scare stories about Windows 98 SE? You know, until or unless you change right now, you'll be left behind and it will be a right hassle to move." And lo, people didn't move. Microsoft kept supporting Windows 98 until the cows turned up for their supper. This time we really, really, really mean it. Moving often means a clear out of all the apps you didn't need in the first place, upgrading all the ones that are left. That and most folks wait until the new product can be proved to work and not be as buggy as a swamp. So come on, all of you, be waiting for the latest operating system. The rest of us are patiently waiting for Windows 7 to be released and for the real beta testing to begin. After that, we'll know what's really involved, and hopefully some bright spark will have solved the migration problem.
And at that point, of course, everybody will start going back to Windows Vista and saying, "Yay, Vista, it wasn't so bad after all." Well, funnily enough, we've got a new Mac convert over on Facebook. Ian Pownall, who I believe also goes by Teach, he says, "Greetings from Europe and the armed forces world over here in Germany." He says, "I'm a recent convert to a Mac, and I found this podcast absolutely invaluable for all those tips and tricks, not to mention the wider tech world. One of the drawbacks with living in Europe is simply a lack of English language material in any form, never mind a specific forum like the Mac world. So this is a great insight into the tech community." So he says, keep up the good work. Bit of a back pat there. And then he also wishes me a happy Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to you too, Ian. So
You got a fan, have you?
I've got a Valentine.
Yet another one for your... Yet another one of your enormous coterie of fans. And
we can edit that bit out, can't we, Scott?
No, that
yes,
stays
and we
in.
Will. Well, you can get in touch in any old way. Valentines are, of course, always welcome. I think Charles and Bobby and maybe Scott over there would like one, even if it is past Valentine's Day. We're here to listen and to accept your love. Thank you already for the folks who've contributed to our podcast today by suggesting points via Twitter. Keep your eyes on Twitter.com, by the way. Twitter.com/GuardianTW every Monday afternoon. That's when we record. And we're seeking questions for our guests and ways that you could steer the agenda. So please do comment and do keep an eye out. Shouts out this week to Jeffson Stein, Tomba18, Felipe Azucares, and Rob Jewett, and all the others. You can also throw yourselves into our digital embrace via the blogs. Send in your comments to guardian.co.uk/techweekly and then find the appropriate blog there.
In this week's technology section with The Guardian, we found out more about precisely what Microsoft's planning for its stores of the future and the retail technologies it aims to introduce. Our man's seen it all and will tell all. There's details of how British researchers are trying to develop systems that will recognise what people are doing just by analysing the pixels in a CCTV image. UMAX's new high-definition hard disk recorder, we review it and find out it's slow but good. And using your phone to move money around is big business in Africa, so why hasn't it taken off yet? Plus 3D gaming, weak passwords, and how the young will pull us out of recession. All in the Guardian Tech section this Thursday.
We're all talked out for this week. Many thanks to our guests, Shannon Spanake, Rick Ray. Cheers to Bobby, Charles, and to Scott, our producer over there from the Peanut Gallery. Next week, we'll find out even more about the mobile industry with our Mobile World Congress review, as well as sticking our noses into the details of a hopeful startup in our elevator pitch series. I'm Alex Krotowski, and we'll see you next week.